What was Ben's campaign song when he ran for mayor of Partridge, Minnesota? Answer at the end of the episode.
I would like to go on record speaking as a citizen of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Local Calzone Zone.
You can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis.
Hello! Welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns, episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian, and I will be your host. This is episode number 108, being recorded Sunday, February 25th, 2024, and today I'm going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 6, End of the World. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. And just a reminder that this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. What up, party people? How we doing? Speaking of parties, we're going to be talking about an end of the world party a little bit later. And also my daughter, Natalie, went to her first sleepover birthday party last night. Something that was really funny. And I don't even know why I'm starting off with this. I just thought it was kind of a funny joke. Joni got me. Actually, it was more of a zinger. But we were talking about, you know, Natalie's first sleepover at her friend's. And Joni was like, you know what? One thing, like, I'm very happy about, I feel safer about, is that there's no creepy older brothers at the house. And I just kind of laughed. It's like, or at least like a lunatic older brother who's like into like war and shit like that, or something. He's just like, come on, girl! Like trying to fight with like his sister's friends and stuff. But anyway, it was just kind of funny. She's like, yeah, we don't have to worry about the creepy older brother. And I just kind of laughed a little, and she goes, not like I had to. And I thought about it for a second, and I looked over, and she was, like, smiling, and it's just like, oh, you bitch. Like, she was talking about me, because I was the creepy older brother for her friend, Heather, who's my sister. So, well played, babe. Yeah, anyway. speaking of fun family stuff, I got a pair of rollerblades the other day. Yeah, rollerblades. Uh-huh. I'm 43 years old, and I have decided that I'm going to try to relive some of my glory days. I used to skate back in the day. And when I say like rollerblading, I have to make this clear right off the bat. I don't mean like spandex shorts or like very short shorts with like five wheels, like speed skating with like an aerodynamic helmet. No, I was into like stunt skating. So the skate parks, the handrails, ramps, things like that. So like, you know, like grinding on ledges and rails and everything. And it sounds so dorky when I'm like trying to explain it to people. But anyway, I used to do that back in, you know, like my high school days and like into probably like my mid to late 20s. I think I was done skating though by the time I got married, I'm pretty sure. And that was, how old was I then? 28, 29, I think. So it's been, no joke, about 14, 15 years since I have rollerbladed. And actually, that's not true, because I did skate. I put on a pair, and I keep saying blades, skates, whatever. You can call them either one, because it's kind of like Kleenex. Kleenex is the name of that company, but everyone calls it Kleenex, even though they're called facial tissues. So I keep saying rollerblading. But Rollerblade was like one of the big name, brand name companies. So it's actually called inline skating. So that's why I'm going back and forth. Anyway, the reason I brought up this stupid story about me trying to relive my glory days is that I took a pretty nice tumble the other day when Natalie and I were skating. And that's another reason I actually, this is no joke, another reason I bought a pair of rollerblades is because Natalie got a pair last year. And you know, like, obviously, we can't rollerblade for probably like 5 to 6 months out of the year just because of the weather. So last year she got them kind of towards the end of fall. So I got to like, she got to get out there a little bit and try to learn. And I told her, you know, it's just like, I used to do this all the time. I would spend, you know, me and my buddies, I mean, like, before partying and like booze was introduced to my life. This is like all we did as high schoolers. We would just like rollerblade and like hang out with like the skateboarders and the bikers and stuff like that. BMX bikers, that is, not like the Hell's Angels. But where the hell am I going here? So Natty got a pair of skates and I told her, like, I'm going to get a pair so I can teach you how to rollerblade. Cause I'm trying to tell her, it's like, well, you got to like, and it doesn't matter. But so I finally got the skates and she's learning a little more. I can already tell it's helping, you know, like me actually telling her, okay, do it like this instead of, okay, trying to demonstrate to her without skates. So anyway, I keep saying anyway, cause I'm going to eventually get to this. We were blading the other day, and we were by her school, which is right by our house. It's like down the street, and I just wasn't paying attention, and I hit a curb or a bump or whatever, because there's just a bunch of, it's like a big sidewalk we were skating on, and I flew. I mean, like, I literally it caught me so off guard, because like, again, and I know this sounds stupid, but like, I've learned how to like fall. When I've been rollerblading, I've learned how to take tumbles, and granted, it's been a long ass time. So I know now, it's like, yeah, I might still know how to do it, but it's going to hurt a lot more because my bones are older. So this one, I just did not see coming. And I just flew, like went like totally like horizontal, and came down, and I had my inhaler, my asthma inhaler, in my front pocket on my left side. I literally landed with all of my weight on that spot on the inhaler. So, you know, all 200 pounds of me, or 195 or whatever it is, landing on that one spot, I fucking kid you guys not, like, I thought I was gonna die. Like, I almost vomited, because it shot up to like my stomach, like how much my leg hurt at that exact moment. And Natalie, like, luckily she didn't see me fall. She saw the aftermath. So she just saw me like on the ground, like a beach whale. Like, oh my God. Like, guys, I'm not kidding. This was one of the worst pains of my life. And I know I talked about like the worst pains of my life, like even on this show before, when I talked about the root canal I had over the summer. But this was up there, because anyone who's interested, reach out. I could send you pictures of the fist size raspberry that was on my leg. Like, it reminded me kind of in the wonderful movie, A League of Their Own, starring Tom Hanks and Gina Davis. There's a part where one of the girls slides into home plate, and then it shows her like after that, and there's like a bunch of reporters and everything, and she kind of lifts up her shorts and show the huge, like, yeah, like the giant bruise on her leg from that slide. So I kind of felt like that. Mine is not that big, but I mean, it's pretty nasty. So this happened a week ago from today, actually, and the bruise is still there. And I put my skates back on for the first time yesterday, because I couldn't put any weight on it. It hurt so bad. I called Joni, like, right when I was able to get up and like pull myself over to a bench. No joke. I know I keep saying no joke, like I'm like, you gotta believe me, like it's making this story any better and like not any more pathetic. But I called Joni up and I was just like, you need to come get us. And she started laughing. She's just like, okay, what's wrong? Because like, I kept making jokes to her about how tiring it was. It's like, man, I haven't skated in so long, and da da da. And it's like, yeah, you're rolling on wheels, but like, you're essentially still running, but with wheels on your feet. So it's like, yeah, you know, like with my asthma and everything, I'm getting tired. So she thought we were just like, we needed to be picked up because we were tired. And I'm just like, no, I fell and it's bad. And you know, she's just like, oh crap, you know. So she got there in like a couple minutes. Like I said, we live right down the street, but I don't know. At least like, the good thing that came out of it is that I got to sit on the couch for like the rest of the day and be nursed, essentially. So that was kind of sweet. But anyway, let's see. What else did I want to talk about here? Oh, if you know what, this is something I don't really talk about things like this on the show very often. I'm actually going to be shaving my head for St. Baldrick's. It's for children with cancer. If you're on Facebook, I'm not on there very often. I literally got back on Facebook like 2 or 3 weeks ago just to sign up for this event, because there is a GoFundMe page. And obviously this money is not going to me. It's going to these children and to this you know, this organization, St. Baldrick's. But on March 20th, this is an event that's going to be held at my work. I will be shaving my head. Not completely bald, but I'll be taking it down to probably like a 2 or 3. Anyone who doesn't know me, I used to shave my head all the time, like in high school through probably like most of my 20s. I had a shaved head, like just because it was, you know, like I was single and it was easy for me to just like cut my hair like that instead of having to go pay for it and everything. And then anytime I wanted a haircut, it's like I would just pull out my own clippers and do it. So it's been a long time, like at least since I got married, I think. Maybe, who knows, but Joni, she doesn't like it when I have a shaved head anymore. So I figured, you know what, this will be a great cause, and also I can get away with doing it at least maybe one more time in my life. So if you are interested, if you want to, you know, like throw a couple bucks, that'd be awesome. Again, you can follow me, don't follow me on Facebook. Don't even, you know what, I'll also put a link in the show notes. Maybe that'll take you right to the page. However, you might still have to be on Facebook. I don't know. It kind of sucks that GoFundMe isn't it mostly based out of Facebook? Yeah, stupid Facebook. But anyway, that's how you can support the cause and maybe me. So I'll give you a little more information when we get closer, but that's March 20th. So, and then the last thing I want to talk about, this is actually just like a quick teaser. Last week, I recorded with another Parks and Rec podcast, actually. Parks Pals is the name of the podcast, Holly and Maddie. Theirs is kind of similar to mine. They just kind of start from the top and just go to the work to the bottom and just kind of stop. However, they go a lot more in depth, and they've had some pretty good guests on their show, actually, from Parks and Rec. So they reached out a couple weeks ago and asked if I wanted to do the episode Live Ammo with them, which actually isn't far from where we are on this podcast. It's only that's episode 19, so it's only about 12 away from where we're at. So when I get to Live Ammo, actually, I don't even know if I still have the notes. I might have tossed them already. So I was going to say it might be a little different because I took my notes different for that podcast because I know how they did it, and I did a lot of... They do more like deep dive type stuff, you know, so I was doing a little bit of that. Now I feel like a slug because it's like, oh, well, I did it for that podcast, but I won't do it for this one. But you know what? Those of you who listen, you get what you get. But anyway, that episode, that one will be out in a few weeks. That's all I was told right now. So I'll get a heads up from Holly. She's the one that I recorded with, and we had a really good conversation about the episode. We recorded for almost 2 hours. It was awesome. So that will be coming, and I'll keep you guys updated on that, and I hope to have her on this show moving forward. So anyway, like I said, there's going to be no filler today. This is a longer Parks and Rec episode. This is one of the extended ones. It was about 27 minutes. So we're just going to talk about that right now, right after this quick promo.
You've heard others, but nothing could prepare you for the shameful stupidity that is the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Witness the hubris as they claim to be the world's authority on comic book movies.
Who said that?
Never said that. We've never said that.
Who cares? A jock said that.
Comic book, TV, movie reviews, news, and whatever they choose. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Jock and Nerd Podcast. Seriously, people really listen to this.
Jock and Nerd!
Okay, here we go. We got season 4, episode 6, End of the World, directed by Dean Holland, written by the man himself, series creator Michael Schur. For our cold open, we start off in Leslie's office, where Andy brings in a man named Herb Schaefer. Herb is played by Robert Pine, father of actor Chris Pine. He's here to reserve one of the parks for the evening because, according to him, the world is going to end tomorrow. Leslie tells us that this cult has been in Pawnee since the 1970s and that they predict a doomsday scenario every few years, holding an all-night vigil every time. So yeah, when we have no idea who this dude is, but it's funny that he comes in and he tells Leslie, yes, the world is going to end tomorrow. Leslie is acting very, I don't want to say condescending, but she's being very playful with the guy. She's just a lot of like, ah, really? Ah, nuts. You sure it's going to end tomorrow? Like, did you do your calculations right? And this guy's just answering her like right back. He's not like being, he's not taking any like condescending tone from Leslie. He's just like, yeah, you know what? He's answering these questions because he's done this many times before, because every few years to just jump right into the episode proper. This is a group known as the Reasonablest. They hold their vigil there as they await for the return of Zorp, which is a giant lizard god who will cleanse the world with his fire of judgment. So again, this was a cult actually that started in the 1970s. They took the name the Reasonablists, and yeah, so every few years or so they book this park. That's why Leslie is just kind of like, oh really? Like she knows this is all bullshit, obviously, but this guy's like very passionate about it, and I think Leslie's just like probably not busy at the time, so she's just like, whatever, I'll have fun with this guy. So real quick, I just wanted to add this, of course, the whole lore of Zorp with Pawnee. So like with other things that this town celebrates, like Little Sebastian, you have this cult-like group called the Reasonablest who serve a 28-foot-tall lizard named Zorp. And I also love the running joke there, more with things that rhyme with Orp. For some reason on this show, you got Zorp there. And then, Leslie Norp, as she was called by Jessica Wicks. They talk about Gorp, which is good old raisins and peanuts. But for some reason still, it's like how many people actually talk about Gorp on a daily basis. Leslie says she has a niece named Torple. Later on in the series, we'll hear part of the law offices that Trevor Nelson works for. One of them is Vorp. And then also there was that phone call, or the message from April where she said someone called Forp called. But anyway, yeah, just the word orps. And also, that was so great, like at the end of it, light refreshments will be served.
Oh, last year they had pizza. Are they going to have pizza again?
Says they've got turkey sandwiches and the nectar of a thousand sorrows.
Oh, that is so good. It's root beer and red wine. I went to one meeting.
Andy's delivery here is so good because like it's so believable, and then just the silence for the group when everyone like looks over at him like, what, like please explain, you know. It's just so, he's like, huh, he's like, I went to one meeting. It's just awesome, like any person that would be like explaining that to like his friends. All right, so we head over to the now empty, or mostly empty, because like the movers are there taking away all the furniture, E720 headquarters. John Ralphio shows up to try and cheer Tom up, saying, hey, we did it. We built a company from the ground up. And then Tom just cuts in and immediately just says, yeah, and we drove it back into the ground. But John Ralphio is clueless, as he still thinks that it was a massive success. Later, the two are sitting and decide that since they each have $5,000 left, they're going to throw a huge party, a party for the end of the world. All right, so we also find out here, as Tom tells us, because John Ralphio's all excited that they have 10 grand left. I mean, 5 grand each. But Tom's like, dude, we started with $450,000. So I can't remember if that exact number came out at the beginning of this season when Entertainment 720 started. But $450,000, first of all, that's how much money John Ralphio had. Well, minus, I'm guessing Tom. Actually, I don't think Tom threw anything in, because this was originally John Ralphio's company that Tom gave him the idea for. And then John Ralphio was like, dude, you got to help me run it. So this was the money that I'm guessing, yeah, John Ralphio got when he got run over by Alexis. But still, I mean, like, so we're on episode 7 right now. This started in episode 1. So let's just say, let's say Entertainment 720 went 7 weeks. They went through $440,000. Like, that's just insane. And I know this show isn't, it's not like everything happens weekly, like we see it weekly, but I'm just using that as an example. But either way, they squandered $440,000 in just such a short amount of time by just being complete fucking idiots. And I love it. All right, so we get a good moment though between Tom and John Ralphio talking about the good memories of Entertainment 720, which I love, because it's like they're reminiscing about, yes, a company that hasn't, that's not even, I would say probably not even like a month old. It's great. It's a genuine moment though between these two friends that we don't see that often, especially from John Ralphio. Like, we do see way later on in the series when he makes that, well, not way later on, but when he's talking to Ben about you know, Ben trying to find what he wants to do, like find his following after he keeps quitting the accountant firms. And John Ralphio tells him the thing about how he gets like his beehole waxed. And either way, it's the one when John Ralphio does him and Barney do that awesome runner where they walk around the entire office and John Ralphio like gets hired and fired within a minute. It's awesome. All right. So we head over to Chris's office. We find out that the reasonablists call themselves this so that if anyone attacks them, it seems like they're attacking something reasonable, which Ben actually is like, that's kind of brilliant when you think about it. But that's just how like idiotic Pawneans think, you know, because they would be, no, we're called the reasonablists. You can't attack us. And then, yeah, people would probably be like, well, yeah, that's true. They are called the reasonablists. So Chris decides, though, that he and Ben should probably escort Leslie to the vigil. However, Ben tries to get out of it unsuccessfully. So, yeah, Chris, it's funny because Leslie's like telling Chris, she's like, I mean, it's not true. The world's not going to end. But Chris, for some reason, I don't know, maybe like he wants him and Ben to be there because he thinks it's like kind of a big deal, which I guess maybe it would be a big deal if like people in your town were like having a celebration because the world's ending. But I guess if you've lived in Pawnee long enough, you could just feel like, oh, it's those fucking idiot reasonablists over there. So back to, yeah, Ben trying to get out of it. Like it kind of confuses Leslie a little bit. She's, you know, what the hell? So she kind of follows him back to his office. And then he tells her, though, that like things are still kind of weird between them and that he just doesn't think it's a good idea that they keep hanging out. And especially like right now with her following him into his office, it's kind of like him telling her, can you please leave? Like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's like for us to what's the point in the two of us like hanging out like alone right now, you know? So but she's just like, okay. I have to point out Leslie's talking head, though, where she tells us that not everyone has to hang out because, yeah, that's like Ben basically telling her, like, we can't hang out anymore. She's like, no, that's fine that, like, Ben and I don't have to hang out. You know, like, not everyone hangs out. I mean, like, and she starts thinking, she's like, Jerry and April don't hang out. I just thought that was actually funny because in this exact episode, we will see later that they do hang out sometimes. I'll explain the circumstances when we get there, but it's just funny. And I wonder if that was done on purpose because we don't see that this very often, but it just happens to be that Jerry and April kind of hang out a little bit. But like I said, I'll get to that. All right. Over to speaking of April, she's with Andy. It's kind of weird actually now that Andy doesn't work at the shoe shine stand, because I know for like pretty much the first three seasons, it was always all right. So we head over to the shoe shine stand where April and Andy, but he doesn't work there anymore. So now he's Leslie's assistant, so that was probably just smarter for them. It's like condense the cast, like make it easier. It's like now Andy is just in the office. We don't have to go to the shoe shine stand for separate recording. We can just get him in there. So April complains that they pretty much do the same shit like all the time because she's asking him, what do you want to do tonight? And he's like, oh, well, you know, like I just assumed we would get drunk and you could watch me play Xbox like always. And she just kind of gives us the look too, like, you can tell, like, she loves Andy. It's not like anything like, oh my God, this is going the wrong, but she's bored. You know, it's just like, we gotta find something else to do because yes, that is all we do. So Andy suggests that they do something off his bucket list. And it's just awesome because like, we didn't know Andy had a bucket list and neither did April. But a couple of the things he tells us are on that list. Catch the winning touchdown at the Super Bowl. Make the world's best grilled cheese, win the lottery, invent something, go skydiving. And then also I have to point this one out. The last entry he has in there is have a son. This one will happen in season 7. And well, actually I was going to say the season 7, but also series finale, One Last Ride. We will see that they have a son and they name him Jack. They decide to start right away with the list as the first thing is to hold $1,000 in cash. So they go right to the bank and it's just like a short stack. You know, it's probably like 30 bills or whatever. So and April puts it in his hand. He's like, yeah. And he's just like, this kind of sucks, though. So then it's just like a smash cut immediately right next to the bank teller literally counting out $1,000 in singles. So she's $999, $1,000. And it's just like, so Andy's like, yeah. He's so excited and he grabs the three stacks of money. So that would be pretty cool to to do. Actually, I've never held that much, or at least that many bills in my hand. It's pretty funny. I just wanted to point out the bank teller is played by Jerrold Prescott. The only reason I'm pointing her out, actually, because she's only in this one episode. I know her from The Walking Dead. She is in season one. She plays the character Jackie. If you don't remember who Jackie is, just look it up on IMDb. Like I said, Jerrold Prescott. Or she is the one person from Rick's group that decides to stay at the CDC as it blows up. Spoiler! Sorry, this happened 15 years ago. Anyway. But yeah, it's pretty funny. Andy's just like, oh my God! He's like, have you ever seen this much money? Have you ever held this much money? As he's handing it, like holding it in the bank teller's face, and she's just like, I just handed it to you. Like trying to be nice, but also kind of like, dude, get the fuck out of it. You know, so then Andy's just like, oh, he's like, it's still cool. Nickels. I want a billion nickels. And April, luckily, she jumps in and like stops, you know, she's like, no, we're not doing that. And it's funny, too, because the bank teller is just like, oh, my God, like her face drops, like, because she knows it's like, if this guy asks for nickels, you're going to have to do it. So that was pretty awesome. All right. So we're back over to the park where everyone is setting up for the vigil. And we get the first real great running joke for this episode when Anne goes over and asks Herb Schaefer for the permit, or for the check, you know, for the permit to rent the park for the night. So he hands it over and then he says, make sure you cash that tomorrow. And he like looks over at his friends and they all start laughing kind of. And like, I can't remember at this point if Anne makes like if she rolls her eyes or whatever. But the joke is obviously that they think the end of the world is tomorrow. So that's why they're just like, yeah, he's like, here, oh, here. Like he doesn't mind, even though $28 is like, you know, it's not like it's a lot of money, but like even like it's just funny that he's like, yeah, yeah, you can cash it tomorrow, which is so funny because it's like, yep, don't cash it tonight. Don't run out and cash that check right now. Wait till tomorrow when the world ends. So, yeah, it's just it's the best thing about it, though, is that they think they're being like clever. Like the reasonableness. So like Herb, he like when he's looking over at his friends, like they get the joke and it's kind of like an elbow nudge, like, oh, we're going to get her. We're going to get her. So, all right. So then Ron comes over to the group and he praises them for reaching the finish line with their weird Zor beliefs or whatever it is. It's just so good. Like, cause Ron just comes in and he totally just preys on these people because he knows they're lunatics. He knows they're idiots. And the thing is, like one of the beliefs that they have is they play flutes during the ceremony when Zorp comes and like melts all their skin off. I guess it's a good thing that Ron makes flutes in his wood shop and he charges $80 each for these things. And he also makes recorders, which I guess are also acceptable to play. He charges $150 for those. So Herb and the others are delighted. And of course he's just like, sure. Would you take a check? And of course, like all his friends are just like, like laughing, but it's like they don't do it like loudly and like obvious. Like it's to where again he does, he looks over, but he does the thing where like he does the shoulder shrug and puts his hand out like almost to his friends, like this is too easy, you know. And Ron is just looking right at the camera, but like just, you know, just he like, sure, hand me $80. Sure, I won't cash it till tomorrow, big guy. But it's just awesome. I mean, like, and you know, like Ron is, this is part of how Ron, why Ron is so like wealthy. I mean, like, again, we know Ron has gold. So it's like, kind of like Dwight Schrute. We never really get to see like Ron, like he's never hurting for money. And I guess neither is Dwight Schrute, but we never get to see the full extent of their wealth because we never get to see like, because they're simple men, I guess, for the most part. So they spend their money on other things like, you know, Dwight. That's why he's been taking karate classes for like 25 years or whatever, because he's got the money to do it. Why not? So, all right. So we cut back over to the Entertainment 720, the party thing that they're setting up for. I have talked many times about how this party is just bullshit. Like, so when you hear me make this reference about the end of the world party, this is finally what I'm talking about. John Ralphio and Ben Schwartz, that is John Ralphio. John Ralphio and Tom, they have $10,000, right? So as far as we know, that's all they're spending on this because John Ralphio is probably broke until his next, you know, scam comes, insurance fraud or whatever comes along. Tom, you know, he's got whatever. This is all the money he has because he's not working at the parks department. He's probably got some savings, but anyway. So I have talked many times about how it's bullshit that they threw this party with the money they had left. Okay, so they still had the warehouse. They still had the party space. Okay, I'll give them that. They didn't have to rent that out because they still had that as part of their lease. They said in the beginning, we have this for one more night. Okay, so there are six open bars for 200 people. Tom tells us there's 200 people on the guest list, which I'll probably talk about this guest list later because it seems like very, like, why did they tell us 200? Because later on, you just start hearing apparently anyone's invited. But anyway, six open bars, a craps table, a roulette table. Obviously, these were both rentals. I have no idea what those cost. A giant pirate bouncy house that would probably cost a couple hundred bucks, nothing major. But this thing is huge, so maybe more than that because it also has like bubbles coming out of it. All right, but then there's a shrimp wall with shrimp distributed by Roy Hibbert, who we know works for 720 already. So I guess that probably goes in with the money Tom was paying him before. However, that was like 600 grand, I think we said, or he was paying like a portion of it. There's gift bags for everyone who knows what kind of swags and all this stuff. There is a fully grown Bengal tiger. So the rental of that, who knows what that would cost. 10 huge security guards, which all need to be paid and are probably being tipped as well. And then there's also DJ Blunt on the turntables. So as I read this off, like, I think like the Roy Hibbert thing would probably cost the most just because he's an NBA player, just having him there. The six open bars, though, for 200 people, that could be, I mean, like, it doesn't, all that matters is the 200 people. I guess, like, the six open bars just means that it's going to be a lot easier and people are going to be getting drinks a lot faster. So I'm just saying, like, if there's a time limit on this party, if there was only, like, one open bar, you might have a lot of drinks that don't get poured because there's only, you know, so it's more of a funnel system, like, we could only pour this amount of drinks. The more people you have, the more drinks that are poured, the more money that is spent. I just feel like this is like completely ludicrous that they spend $10,000 on all this stuff. So if anyone wants to do the research and let me know, maybe if I'm wrong or if I'm 100% right, go ahead and do that for me. All right, back to the candlelight vigil with the reasonablest. Shauna Mulway Tweep is here. We haven't seen her in a few episodes, so I always love seeing her. She's probably one of my favorite side characters. She's great. She questions the importance of this event since, again, yeah, like we talked about, like, why are Chris and Ben here? So she's just like, well, it's kind of weird that two guys from the city manager's office are at this event. Should we be, like, looking into this, or should we actually be worried about something? Which is kind of weird because, again, it's like, what do you people think is going to happen? Like, you know, this is bullshit, but like, it's weird that like Chris in the beginning, he's like, maybe we should be there. And then even Shauna, like, why are you guys like, what? I don't understand like what you're implying, like, or what anyone's implying that like, we need to be here for this thing. So Ben assures her though, that the reason he and Chris are there is just because they had nothing better to do. When they walk away though, Shauna asks Leslie, is he single? She's like, well, oh, Chris, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I think he's dating Jerry's daughter actually right now, which Shauna stops her. And she's like, no, I'm talking about Ben. So then like Leslie just immediately, she just like kind of goes into a panic and she's just like, she starts like kind of being belligerent. So it's actually funny though, that Leslie assumes that she's talking about Chris because there's some more foreshadowing there. Chris and Shauna Mulway Tweep will date for a little bit. Like, it's nothing big. They go on like a few dates. It's like maybe like an episode or two. However, Chris, though, when that ends, he's just like he's about everything. He just takes it super hard. Yeah, but then Shauna walks away and Leslie starts to panic as Anne walks up. And she assures Leslie that she has nothing to worry about until Shauna rubs Ben's arm.
I'm sure this is nothing.
Okay, well, that was definitely something.
Oh my god.
I know that move.
They're gonna have sex in 5 minutes. I gotta stop this. I gotta keep them away from each other for the rest of their lives.
This has always been one of my favorite Anne parts, just because this is, you know, yet again another episode where Anne's just not, you know, she's just kind of in the background. Like, I feel like for a lot of these episodes lately, Anne has been almost at like Jerry and Donna level, where it's like, we'll give her a line or two. So it kind of sucks because obviously Rashida is one of the main characters. But yeah, she just like her line delivery there is so great. Like, well, I've seen that before. Also because she's always so reassuring to Leslie. This is like one of the only times where it's like, Anne, like, what are you doing? You're actually scaring Leslie. Like, you're not telling her what she wants to hear. It's great. We quickly shoot back over to April and Andy. We see that Andy has won a scratch-off ticket, so technically that counts as winning the lottery. And also he has made what April considers the greatest grilled cheese sandwich ever. So they can cross those two things off the bucket list. Back over to the vigil. Leslie starts to get a little rude towards Shauna, who's still hanging out with Ben. Like, everyone's aware this is happening. Like, Leslie, you know, obviously she's just making kind of shitty comments towards Shauna. And you can see Shauna reacting, but, like, Shauna has no idea where it's coming from. So she's just kind of like, all right, whatever. But she's kind of being, like, a little short with Leslie, too, I think. Ben, however, obviously, like, he knows why she's doing this, because, like, Leslie just, she's doing anything she can to get in the way of anyone else, like another woman, at least talking to Ben. So he knows exactly what's happening. So Shauna says, though, that she's thinking about checking out Tom's End of the World party. And Ben says that he may do the same, which is, it just starts eating away at Leslie, because when she hears Shauna mention that, she just assumes that there's no way Ben's going to go to this thing. And usually he wouldn't. But I wonder if this is also, and I just kind of thought of it right now. I wonder if this is another way of Ben trying to make Leslie jealous. I don't think so, because Ben's not that kind of person. But just like, yeah, because why would Ben be interested in this? But it might also be a way for him to be like, all right, I got to get over this Leslie thing. So you know what? I'm just going to go out and, yeah, maybe I'll hang out with Shauna all way tweep. So, speaking of, we cut over to the end of the world party. It is bumping, obviously. Tom knows how to throw a party. We saw that in the Greg Pakaitis episode when Anne's Halloween party sucked. So Tom and his then wife, Wendy, came in and they made it awesome. So we see a gorgeous woman. She's in one of those. I don't even know what these things are called. It's like those machines where you step inside of it and there's a blower attached to it, and it just, like, there's dollar bills on the ground and they just start shooting everywhere and you just have to catch them, and like whatever you catch you get to keep. So that's another thing there that's also part of this $10,000. Who knows like what kind of bills are in there, but I assume they're not singles. I would think probably like, god, lowest would be like fives, obviously, you know, fives, tens, twenties, hundreds even. But it's crazy. Like, this is more of the $10,000 budget that they just have cash. And it's like, this is literally them just giving cash away. This isn't even like them spending it on something. It's just like, here, whatever cash you can catch, you get to keep. Back over to the park, Ron explains the origins of reasonableism. Sorry, this is tough to say, to Chris. This is just such a funny line. I was laughing my ass off here. So he tells Chris that this was started by a man named Lou Prasodovich, which is a great name. And of course, Michael Schur wrote this episode. Prasodovich, great name. So he tells us that this guy, Lou, he had a great idea. And he wrote a book called the book was called Organize It. And it was a book just about like how to organize your office. This book turned out to be like a mess. I'm so sorry. Like, I'm laughing as I'm saying this. So I'm like mumbling and stuttering a lot on these words. But the way that Ron tells it, he's just like, he had a great idea and he came up with this book called Organize It. Then he had another great idea. Hey, maybe there's a 28-foot lizard with a volcano for a mouth. So he wrote his second book. So I love that he's just like, yeah, all of a sudden this guy wrote a book about this. And then he had another great idea. And it's just to show you that it's like, where the fuck did this come from? Like, he doesn't say anything about like this guy's origins or backgrounds or anything. All we know is that this guy wrote a book about organizing. And then he had another great idea. Hey, I'll write a book. And the awesome thing is that the second book he wrote is called Organize It 2, Engage with Zorb. So I love that he used the success of the first book for the book title, but then it's just called Engage with Zorb and it has nothing to do with like organizing your office. So it's just, oh my God. I mean, like, I think the way like Nick Offerman's delivery is so good, just how it's, then he had another idea, like kind of showing us, yes, and talking to Chris, like how ludicrous it is. But it is funny because as he's telling Chris this, the guy Herb Schaefer is like, he keeps butting in like, oh, here's that book. And he's like, he just happens to be standing close, so he overhears it. So Chris asks him, he's like, hey, since you have those two books, can I read them real quick? And the guy's like, oh, you know, you can have them. But remember, Chris is a speed reader and he reads 3,000 words per minute. So it's kind of funny. Like, we see like a talking head with Ron as he cuts over and he's just like, oh, what's my religion? Oh, it's none of your business. Such a great line by Ron. I love that he can just come out and tell all of us, hey, eat shit. That's what my religion is. It's none of your business. I love that so much. Back over to the bucket list. Andy is now living out his dream to be an action star. All right, so this is what I was talking about before when I talked about the part where Leslie says that April and Jerry don't hang out. So I wouldn't say that this is necessarily them hanging out. However, April has called Jerry and said, can you please come over to my house to help us with this thing that Andy and I are trying to do? So she more so called him over there basically just because they're trying to make this action star movie for Andy and they want Jerry to be the bad guy. So all Jerry needs to do is stand there with like a knife to April's throat and then read a couple lines off so Andy can come in and do his thing. But I still think I'm going to say, it's like, hey, Jerry, what'd you do last night? Well, it's like I hung out with April and Andy last night for a little bit and helped them do this video they were doing. So I'm going to consider that hanging out. So I like that in the same episode, Leslie says April and Jerry don't hang out. We find out that they kind of do. Anyway, back to this movie. Like I said, Jerry is there to serve as the villain and he's just holding like a butter knife to April's throat as April's sister, Natalie, who we also haven't seen, I think, since their wedding. She records it on her phone, so she's essentially just the camera person. So, like I told you before, Andy's the action star here. However, of course, it's not going to be Andy. It's got to be Burt Macklin, FBI. So he's outside. He's got like a motorcycle helmet on, throws the visor down, and literally runs through like the patio glass door. Like it just shatters. He takes the helmet off and he's just like, oh, it hurts. Oh, just kidding. And he pulls it off and he's like, psych, or whatever he says. And then he knocks out Jerry. Like, obviously he doesn't really punch him, but Jerry falls onto a cushion. I thought it was kind of funny because this exact same thing happened last week when Andy actually faked for a second about breaking his nose. And he's like, just kidding, blood capsules. But then he actually did break his nose. So yeah, I thought that was just kind of funny that they did that in two episodes in a row with Andy, like, potentially getting hurt and then maybe being hurt, but not being, well, at least in this situation. He does pull the helmet off, though, and, I mean, his face is very red. It might just be because the helmet was tight. But it also, I mean, like, if, clearly, like, for the episode, you know, it was breakaway glass, and you can pretty much see the glass, like, shatter before he even runs into it. But, like, in real life, this is, like, it's hard to punch through like a car door window. And I'm not saying this from experience. I've never punched through a car door window, but at least like what I've heard. But like to try to run through a sliding glass door, that's like two panes of glass. And it's also just hilarious to me because it's like, dude, those fucking things aren't cheap. You just destroyed like a very important part of your home, which is like the back sliding glass door. So it's just insane. I mean, like just like how April and Andy think. But anyway, yeah, like I said, so Jerry just kind of falls onto this like the long couch cushion they have set up. It's great that they didn't make him actually fall over just onto nothing. And then Burt Macklin and Janet Snakehold just start making out as Jerry sits back up and he's like, can I go home? No, Gail made a roast. And so good stuff. Back over to the vigil. Ron joins the Reasonablists as they play their flutes. They're all like playing together. And of course, the name of the song that they're playing is called Symphony for the Righteous Destruction of Humanity in E minor, as written by Lou Prozodovich. It's just so funny that like Ron is, you would think Ron was like one of the Reasonablists, like how he interacts with them and how he knows about their culture and everything. Maybe he is actually, that'd be funny. Maybe this is why Ron's there, like just hoping that the world will end. However, he tells us many times throughout that it's like, this is all nonsense. So Chris has a quick talk, I guess, whatever, with Herb Scafer about the books that he just read. And it is funny because he's like, I read your books. And he's like, first of all, they're bonkers filled. Like, they're just like, they're insane books. But he does say there's one thing that he's interested in, and it's the reincarnation aspect of it. So Herb tells Chris that when Zorp arrives and burns his flesh off, he will reemerge as a fleshless, chattering skeleton. So that's like what they can. It's just another thing, too, that like, oh, I'm going to be reincarnated. It's like, as what? And it's like, you're going to be a fleshless chattering skeleton. It's like, that's not reincarnation. That's just what would happen to me if my skin was melted off. So it's like, I'm not really. Yes, I guess there would be a change in my appearance because I am a skinless skeleton. But yeah, it's just kind of funny to me. It's like, that's not reincarnation. Reincarnation means you die and then you are reborn as something else. So it's just kind of funny that they word it as reincarnation, but it's like, no, it's just stupid. It's just like, that's your form is changed. I don't know. Anyway, Chris is horrified and he's just like, I don't like this part at all. He's like, that what you talked about earlier sounded better, but yeah, he's freaked out, so he walks away. We see Ben getting ready to leave, but not before Leslie stops him and starts going on about nonsensical things. She's just trying to keep him there, and she doesn't want him to go to this party that Sean Amalway tweet might be at, just because, you know, obviously she's worried about that. Then she comes up with something on the spot, and she tells him, oh, there's something I have to show you, and we have to drive there to go see it. So you can tell by Ben's face right when Leslie says this that he knows she's kind of, like, she's just like, what the hell is she doing? Like, he knows there's nothing, like, for them to see. But he's like, you know what? All right, fine. I'll bite. And I have to say, actually, remember, we'll see a little bit later on in the season, this is when when Tom starts Rent-A-Swag, and he asks Andy and Ben for help because he wants them to teach him, like, how to play basketball. So you see Ben come into the office, and he's just like, hey, I assume it's a lie, but I had to come check. Michael Stipe from REM is not really in your office, right? So Tom actually texted Ben that Michael Stipe was in his office, and that's how Ben came over. Like, Ben knew it was bullshit and he knew Tom needed something, but it's still funny. He was like, I just kind of had to check. And then, of course, he texted Andy too, like, I have Skittles for you or whatever. And he gives Andy a bag of Skittles, and Ben's like, that's not fair. Why did he get his thing? But anyway, it just kind of shows you, maybe Ben did think that Leslie had something to show him. However, doubt it. Quickly, we just, like, really quickly, we cut back to the Entertainment 720 party, and there's a really cool scene. It's a drum line for Tom and John Ralphio, essentially just, like, tooting their own horns, literally. Back over to Leslie and Ben, who have been driving around aimlessly for some time. She finally pulls over at a rundown gas station that she says was owned by Mick Jagger. And when Ben asks about that, she's like, oh, yeah, I pulled the notes on it, and it says that it was owned by an M. Jagger. So I assume it has to be Mick Jagger, right? So she's just kind of like, it's just even like everything she's saying right now, she knows it's idiotic. And it's like, let's see how long it goes before Ben. Then it happens right then. Ben finally stops her, and he's just like, I know what you're doing. He's like, we broke up. Like, we shouldn't be hanging out. This is just like this. Like, we broke up. It was your decision to do that because of what you want to do. You want to be a city councilor. And he gets it. So, you know, she's just like, she has, like, nothing to say. She has no rebuttal. So she's just like, okay. So Ben actually has, like, a really good reaction to her saying, okay, and not having an argument, because Ben actually looks like he makes, like, a face almost like he's kind of upset that she didn't have, you know, because it's like Leslie Knope will always figure out a way. So I kind of like this part that, yeah, Ben actually makes a face kind of like, really, that's it? Like, come on, Leslie, like, you can. So either way, yeah, it just kind of sucks. There's really nothing they can do about it. Back over to April and Andy, they go over the list trying to find anything else that's still on there that they can actually do, like, given their current, you know, situation and resources. April comes across one that Andy is wary about, but she convinces him that they can actually do it right now. She says that they can steal her dad's car, they've got $1,000, and they've got the motivation to do it, so they're both just like, screw it, let's go. Quickly back to the vigil. Ron, Ann, and Chris talk about reincarnation a little bit more, and then Ann and Chris decide that they're going to go to Tom's party, which we're back at right now, where Donna, John Ralphio, and Tom talk about how great the party is. So you can tell it's like kind of, it's just like, it's finally like all the crazy stuff they had planned is over, and now it's just like, all right, let's just ride out the rest of this party. So they're just kind of sitting there chilling, and then Tom's ex, Lucy, shows up. You remember Lucy? She came in at the end of season 2, maybe into season 3. Or maybe it was just season 3. Maybe she wasn't in season 2. I don't remember. However, she's played by Natalie Morales. And you'll remember she broke up with Tom because he was, like, obsessed with the whole Ron and Wendy situation. He just couldn't get over it. So he said that she was, like, an awesome girlfriend. And she even said, like, I still like you, Tom, but I just, like, you know, so if you can ever get over this, you know, call me back. We'll see what happens. And sure enough, spoiler, like I talked about at the beginning of the episode, Tom and Lucy will get married in season 7. So we know she is going to come back. However, she's in this episode and then we don't see her again till season 7. But the reason she came over is because John Ralphio invited her.
Tom.
Hey, Lucy, what are you doing here?
John Ralphio called me and told me that this was a very special occasion and I should come down. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too.
Wanna go dance?
Yeah, give me a minute.
Okay.
I can't believe you called her for me. It's really nice of you, man, for real. Thanks.
No. Thank you. I mean, for everything.
I actually forgot they ever dated. I was trying to hit that.
What a great guy that John Ralphio is, right? Great friend, you know? All right, so back over to the vigil. Herb gives an impassioned speech about Zorp's arrival. This is another great line because he's just like, and Zorp will arrive, and we will all die, and everything he's talking about. And then he's just like, also, last call for donuts. You just see a couple of the reasons. It's like, oh, like they get up like, oh, yeah, we're not going to miss that. It's great. So Leslie and Ron are just, they're kind of off to the side shooting the shit. And this is like the whole thing with Ben going to the party, like for Leslie, she can't leave this thing. That's why like she has to stay here to kind of like spectate, which is weird too, because it seems like and they don't do it often, but like an all night vigil, it's like, yeah, I guess you do need someone there to supervise. So that's why Leslie couldn't really leave. She did leave with Ben for like, I'm guessing like an hour to do that gas station thing, but then she had to come back. So, but yeah, just the whole thing about the last call for donuts is amazing. But yeah, so her and Ron are talking and she's just like, she doesn't do this very often, especially with Ron, where she just goes, it'll usually be a, hey, in this situation, what would happen? And then Ron will give like an example, but she just says straight up, she's like, I'm upset about Ben. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I think he's going to get with Sean Amalway tweet. And at first, Ron does the usual, like, hey, I said I didn't want to talk about this, like, kind of joke thing. And Leslie just, she's not even having it. She just keeps talking. So Ron kind of gives her, like, some, you know, like, Ron is the master of advice. He's, like, the low-key master of advice. He tells her, like, okay, well, you're upset right now because like you didn't get to see Ben, and if it were the end of the world, you'd want to be with Ben. And then he tells her, he's like, but this isn't the end of the world. He's like, tomorrow morning, he's like, we're gonna all wake up, all this stupid shit we're doing right now is gonna mean nothing. And you say, basically telling her, he's like, you can still get with Ben, like you still have a chance here, this isn't the end of it, you know. So I really like that. All right, so then we cut over to April and Andy, who have taken her dad's car, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind, to be honest. That's the funny thing. They like run out stealing his car, but like we've met April's dad. We know he'd probably be like, sure, go ahead and take it, Zuzu. She tells Andy that it should take them about 30 hours to get to where they're going. We still have no idea where this is, by the way. Since they forgot to bring music, Andy decides that he's just going to take a quick 12-hour nap. So good. He's like, oh, really? There's nothing to do. He's like, all right, starts yawning. Well, babe, go ahead and wake me up in about 12 hours. And she, I don't think April cares. She's like, whatever. Anyway, back at the end of the world party, things are wrapping up. And I say wrapping up, which leads to them going outside. And all the cars actually have bows on them. So it's almost like they were wrapped up like presents. Thought that was kind of cool. Tom is just thanking everyone for coming. Oh, and back to more on the budget here. Tom is telling everyone, hey, if you're too drunk to drive, we have basically like Ubers or I don't remember if Uber was a thing yet at this time. I don't think it was. So I don't think he uses that. But he just says like we have designated drivers to take you home. So, I mean, like all those people probably would have had to been paid, I assume. It's not volunteers. And then he also is just like, oh, and also designated drivers take thank you bags. So there's also thank you bags on top of the gift bags that were like being given out inside the party. So it's just like, it's insane. I mean, like where the hell, this is all with $10,000. It's just crazy. All right. So then Lucy, Tom's ex, we talked about, she comes by and says bye to Tom. And he's just kind of like, he's a little bit bummed out because he's like telling her, you know, like, yeah, you know what, like I failed essentially. And I think it's kind of funny because I think Lucy's almost like, I don't really care about this right now. She just kind of tells him she's going to grad school in Bloomington, which is great. And then I think before he can get like to like, you know, start like self-deprecating like he always does. She just kind of kisses him, or not kind of, she kisses him. And I really think it's almost like what Leslie did in that episode, just to the episode Soulmates, just to shut Tom up. I think that's what Lucy kind of did here. Like, I'm going to give him a kiss because I don't feel like hearing him bitch about this. And also it's like, hey, you're still kind of cute. Maybe there's hope for us. So like I said, we will see Lucy again, but not till season 7. In a great scene at Ben, April, and Andy's house. This is the next morning, by the way. So this is like, yeah, since it was an all-night vigil, and then also Tom was having the end-of-the-world party, like, this is all, like, the same day, essentially, but it's just bleeding into the next day. So I just said next day, but bleeding into. So, yeah, it's just, it's, the day has reset. Aren't you guys happy that I'm telling you how days reset? Oh, God, what a morning. A moron. I'm so sorry. This is a long episode. This was a long episode. There's a lot of notes here. I apologize for all my stutters and my mispronunciations and whatnot. Anyway, okay, let's get back to this this really great scene that I was trying to get to. Leslie shows up the next morning at Ben, April, and Andy's house. She knocks on the door. Ben answers, and he's clearly like, because he left, remember, like he, after Leslie tried to get him to stay, Ben went home. He just went to sleep. He didn't go to Tom's party. We didn't see him there, at least. We didn't see Shauna there. But yeah, so he, and he doesn't, he's not hungover or anything. So, I mean, if he did go to the party, it was probably just for a little bit. But he, he answers the door, and Leslie's like, hey, you know what? I'm really sorry. She kind of just talks a little bit more about their kind of awkward situation and just apologizes for how she acted. And she's like, you know what? I'm really sorry. You know, like if you want to start a relationship with Shauna, you can do that. Why don't you go get her? Tell her to come out and I'll apologize to her too. And Ben just kind of like looks around a little bit and he's like, oh, he's like, well, Shauna didn't sleep over last night. And he looks at Leslie and Leslie's smiling and she's like, eh, see what I did there? You know, and it's just, it's a great scene because it's like, it was a good way for her to be like, You didn't sleep with Shauna last night, did you? But like without actually having to ask, like we all knew he didn't and she did too, but it was still just like an awesome way to be like, you could have, but you didn't. Cause I'm pretty sure he could have. Cause I remember Mark Brendana would sleep with Shauna like the day he met her. So I'm sure Ben probably could have too. Okay. They both laugh about it. And then Leslie leaves. So back over to April and Andy, we see where they were going, where this road trip was taking them. The Grand Canyon. It is truly an amazing shot, though, as like the two of them walk up and the camera's over them and they actually are on location at the Grand Canyon. We get I'm going to actually say that this is probably one of the most iconic lines from Parks and Rec.
Where's all the faces? The presidents.
Right? That's a good one. All right. So now we're at the tag of the episode. We're back at Leslie's office where we see Herb Schaefer again. And he's shocked that his calculations were off and that the actual end of the world is coming, but it's not for another 6 months. He asks Leslie, hey, can you check, though, if May 19th, if we can have the park again? Leslie checks. There's only one problem, though. The park is booked that day for an ice cream social. Oh, that's okay, though, because Herb goes back in and he checks his calculations and he figures out that, oh, wait a minute, not the 19th. I mean the 20th. And it's funny, like, the way he asks her is, like, is the park open? And Leslie's like, is the park open on the 20th? And he just kind of, like, nods. She's like, yeah, it's open. He's like, okay, yes, the 20th. That's the day that the world's going to end. So it's just, it's so funny. I mean, you got to, yeah, it's obviously I kind of botched it, but it was a lot funnier. Not Leslie's just like, the park's free that night. So then as he's getting up, he's, like, saying bye to her and thank you for everything. Thanks for reserving the park. And he's just like, can you also put 10 tickets aside for me for the ice cream social the night before? Leslie's like, already did it. So I just love that. It's just great. And it also just shows you how Leslie, like how in touch she is with the citizens of Pawnee, even if they are fucking weirdos who think that a giant lizard is coming. So, all right. So that is the episode. End of the world. On IMDb, it's sitting at an 8.5. My thoughts on this episode, this is a wonderful episode. I love this episode. I think this could be like higher. I mean, this could even be a 9. I mean, there's so much going on. And this is a long episode too. Obviously, this is an extended episode because it's such a good episode. But here we go. Let's see. Actually, just for my thoughts on the episode. again, last week's episode, Meet and Greet, hated that episode. So this one coming, you know, like directly after and just like me doing a complete 180, just like loving this episode. Very happy about that. We meet the Reasonablest and Zorp. So this isn't like a huge story or not story, like a huge part of the Pawnee lore. However, I just thought it was, you know, like obviously we got to point that out because it's one of the another one of the quirks about the citizens of Pawnee and just this town. And also we will see them again, though. I believe we hear about Zorp maybe a couple other times, but they actually will return. A couple of the Reasonablest, they come back and they talk about Zorp, but that's not for a couple seasons. That's in season 6 or 7. I forgot exactly. The whole thing, speaking of the Reasonablest, that joke, would you take a check? Like how he keeps looking at his friends thinking it's like the funniest thing, like, you know, like post-dating a check. It's just like the world's going to end. So I love like all these people the next day were probably just like, ah, dang, I better make sure I have that money in my bank account because I wrote Ron that check, or they better go like cancel their checks or whatever. The Grand Canyon or Mount Rushmore, that whole scene there, just so amazing. Like in the face that April makes when she turns to Andy, when he asks about the face, is like clearly having written down, go to the Grand Canyon, because she took him to the Grand Canyon, but not knowing what the difference is between that and Mount Rushmore. Also, finally getting back to the Leslie and Ben, like, will they, won't they? Because we took like 2 or 3 episodes off from that, like pretty much after they decided we can't do this thing anymore. It was like there was a couple, you know, like maybe one of them would make a face or say something kind of like quickly about like not being with the other. Like Ben saying in the last episode, like there's really nothing keeping me in Pawnee. Or that might have been in the Pawnee Rangers the week before. But either way, I like that they're coming back to this, like reminding us like, hey, don't forget about Ben and Leslie. You know, there's still something there. Entertainment 720 is officially dead. Thank God. Even though I did say I liked the some of the stuff that came out of that. It's let's move on because it was kind of, you know, in the end, it was pointless. And then I like that we got to see Lucy again, who will be Tom's future wife. And every time I say future wife, I think of the movie The Room because Tommy Wiseau's. It's just The Room. If you've never heard of The Room, just look it up. But yeah, he never says my fiance. He always just says my future wife or my wife of the future. That's gonna wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. You can also like and follow on Instagram @citizensofpawneepodcast and @parksrecmemes. Next week I'll be covering season 4, episode 7, The Treaty. Thank you for listening to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name's Brian, and I'll see you next week. Ben's campaign song was Whoomp, There It Is by Tag Team.